Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
WTTW's Jeffrey Bear has enlisted a team of super sleuths to solve some of Chicago's most baffling and time-tested mysteries. Did a UFO fly over O'Hare? Our own Tom Skilling is part of that story, by the way. How did the alligator later named Chance the Snapper suddenly appear in Chicago's Humboldt Lagoon? Is Hull House haunted? So many stories, and we're going to find out with Jeffrey Bear. Jeffrey, how are you, my friend?
I'm just great. How are you?
Thank you for being in studio. I remember, by the way, the last time you were here, you were in the lobby, and you were talking about the columns and how someone would be rolling over in the graves if they saw what the building did to update the design, which is what I love about you.
Yeah, it's a Mies van der Rohe building, yes. So very glass and steel, modern, and he was very, God is in the details, he used to say, and some of the details have been lost.
Tweaked.
There you go.
we'll call it tweaked. There are so many mysteries in Chicago, and I love all your series. I love all your tours, and you've been doing some really interesting things focused on the city. And there are so many mysteries in Chicago. I can't imagine they're going to fit into just one of these shows. But let's talk about the first special and how it kind of came about.
Well, this was, I've been doing these programs on WTTW for 30 years,
wow.
History of Chicago, touring around Chicago, we're always looking for some new angle, and our vice president of production, Shelley Spencer, said, hey, what about Chicago mysteries? And we all went, ooh, that mm-hmm. sounds cool. Mm-hmm. We have no idea what that means, but it sounds like a good idea. So then Shelley said, yeah. I'm sure you'll think of some. And she left it up to us, and it's one of the most fun shows I've ever done.
It's very visual. So, obviously, when you're looking through some of these things, you do such a great job kind of telling the story throughout the city. But give me like a highlight is the O'Hare, the UFO flying. And I love that Tom Skilling plays wrong. He thinks people are tired of him. Everybody loves this guy. They do. They just love this guy.
Well, so, we started looking around for mysteries solved and unsolved.
Okay.
You listed a few in the introduction. So, in 2006, Tribune reporter John Hilkovich broke the story. A bunch of people cited this bizarre kind of gray disc hovering above the C concourse, the United Airlines terminal at O'Hare. And these were not, crackpot Looney Tunes.
Yeah.
They were airline professionals looking up in the sky, seeing this gray disc hovering above the terminal. And the airlines and the FAA said nothing to see here. So John Hilkovich got a FOIA request and we got access to it for our show. You hear the air traffic controllers in the tower.
Wow.
Say, talking to the people down on the ramp. One of the pilots who was parked at C-17, stuck his head out the window and looked up and saw it. And they don't know what it is, but you hear the chatter. You hear them saying, did you guys see a spinning disc? What do you mean, like a Frisbee? No, like a, like a UFO thing?
Wow.
Yeah.
What year was this?
2006.
2006. It was in the 70s and the pilots saw it. I think they were still having like a martini before they flew and stuff. So it might have been a different story. But this is a little bit more contemporary. And Tom plays a role in this thing.
Well, the answer that I think it was the FAA said it could have been a freak weather phenomenon called a hole punch cloud. So then we thought, well, we got to get Tom Skilling into our show. Who better to explain what a hole punch cloud is than Tom Skilling? But it doesn't really explain the issue, because a hole punch cloud is the result. The story of the UFO was that it shot straight up and made a hole in the clouds, and then you saw blue sky in through this hole.
Oh, okay.
So there is such a thing as a hole punch cloud, but something had to have made the hole in the cloud. So that that doesn't really explain that's not really a good answer either.
No, probably not. Probably not. But you go back also, this is from 2006, you go back to the early 20th century too. It was, what was the mysterious vessel known as the Fool Killer at the bottom of the Chicago River?
This might be my favorite story.
No, okay.
And actually, we're sitting up here in your penthouse studio at WGN and looking down on the Chicago River.
Yes,
what a beautiful view you have up here.
This is the best view. isn't it?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, yeah. So down there in the Chicago River, where I'm looking right now, in 1915, this kind of self-promoting diver, rescue diver kind of guy, underwater diver, claimed that he stubbed his toe on some strange metal object on the bottom of the river when he was down underwater laying cable on the river.
Okay.
You know, he was in one of those big...
Sounds safe.
Big underwater suits, you know, that they used to have, the diving bell sort of looking suit with the metal helmet. And he claimed he stubbed his toe. Well, you know, I don't know if this is like maritime law or just, you know, nobody caring, but they raised it and then they said, well, okay, you found it, you own it.
Yeah.
And so it was this mini, it looked like a mini submarine. It looked like it could hold maybe five people. And the diver, whose name was William Frenchy Deneau, claimed that he found human remains and a dog skull inside. And so he wanted to make some money from his discovery. So I don't know if he cleaned it up or not, but he put it in a skee ball arcade on State Street in the Loop.
Of course, who wouldn't?
And charged people a dime to
see it.
Go inside if you dare. And there were these wonderful posters of it. And so this was the object. And so our task, I interviewed this wonderful podcaster, Mark Chrysler, and he'd been obsessed with this for years.
Oh.
And to figure out what it really was. I guess I won't give away.
No, don't.
Story.
But I will tell you, during that time, I mean, the stockyards were dumping pig parts and animal parts and skulls into the river. So you never know. I can't believe you could see down there.
Oh, you can't. You can't today.
Yeah,
I mean, the divers who go in the river, they're just feeling around.
That's wild. The girl in the glass at Graceland, and the mystery is, does her statue really vanish during thunderstorms?
Yes. Well, I interviewed Adam Seltzer, the Chicago mystery guy. You probably had him on your show.
Yeah.
And it happened to be raining the day we were standing under umbrellas on in the TV show, you know, when we're interviewing him, and the statue did not disappear. But Adam has researched this poor little girl whose name was Inez. So if you go to Graceland Cemetery, for whatever reason, her monument is in a kind of a glass case, you know, because I think it's a little funerary statue. It's probably a generic statue of a little girl with a dog sleeping in her feet. Very, very heartrending. And for whatever reason, it got put under glass. It would probably long ago have, you know, dissolved.
At some point.
You know?
Okay, got it.
But it's like it's brand new because it's been sitting under glass for who knows how long. Wow. And so there's a lot of, you know, myths surrounding who was Inez. How did she end up dying? There's a myth, there's an urban myth that she died because her mother, she was misbehaving and her mother locked her out of the house in a lightning storm and she was struck by lightning. So the great thing about Adam is he really, really researches these things. And we talked a little bit in the show, we didn't quite have a lot of time, but he did a bunch of research and he figured out who Inez really was. Her mother did not lock her out in a lightning storm. And she does her. As far as we could tell, her statue did not disappear.
Wow! You know, there's so many stories, especially at Graceland Cemetery. And you know, you see those vintage pictures. No, digressing a little bit, but those vintage pictures that are like oval on some of these headstones. And now I know it's a thing to put a QR code on a headstone.
Oh my gosh!
So that you can see who that was, and it's a video of their life. When you walk up to most headstones obviously don't have pictures of who's buried there. And those pictures were a clear sign of like maybe the early 20th century. But now, yeah, there's QR codes.
Well, but you know, from my work at WTTW, I deal a lot in 100, 200 year old history and more.
Right.
And that's an interesting thing to me. On the one hand, kind of nice. You get to learn about the person. But I think about 150 years from now, who's going to have a smartphone or use a QR code?
You're next.
It's going to be like a VHS tape that nobody can play.
Well, and it's like at that point in time, you know, are descendants alive anymore? But I mean, that's the case at Graceland too. That's why you do these research projects.
And that's Adam's kind of stock in trade. And he says this in our show that most people, the last thing anybody wrote about him was when they carved the headstone, but he likes to research their histories and sort of bring them back to life.
Yeah. Jeffrey Bear's new special is Chicago Mysteries, WTTW.com/Chicago Mysteries. There's more with them next on 720 WGN. Why do Chicagoans, this is such a cliche for Chicago, never put ketchup on a hot dog. And I'll tell you, Bob Surratt wrote a book on that. I could have him in here in 5 minutes and tell you why.
Well, maybe he's got the same answer we had. But I like this one because I will say that we solved that mystery. You know, so what you always hear, and it's totally unsatisfying, is, well, because ketchup is loaded with sugar, so it spoils the taste of the hot dog. True. But that's true if you're eating a hot dog in Cleveland or in Los Angeles or in New York or anywhere else.
Fair.
So why, and they put ketchup on their hot dogs.
That's very fair.
So why don't we put ketchup on our hot dogs? So we got Monica Eng, who you've probably had on the show before, wonderful Axios reporter who's a food expert. And I'll give this one away because I think it was a really satisfying answer. In the Chicago hot dog is garnished in a way that is a metaphor for all the immigrant groups that have come to Chicago over the centuries. So actually, this is one of my trivia questions for you later, so I'm not going to fully say it. But all of the ingredients on the hot dog are representative of the various different groups that have come to Chicago and contributed to the seven ingredients that you put on a Chicago hot dog. So you get this beautiful bouquet of different ingredients on the hot dog. Now you're going to ruin it by slathering it with sugary ketchup.
But mustard's okay.
Well, mustard is one of the seven ingredients.
Okay.
That beautiful, as Monica said, that beautiful symphony of different ingredients that would be like a, she says, like a big bassoon, just like, you know, laying down on top of it, and would just overpower all the different flavors in this signature Chicago hot dog.
Now, what's funny is if I've gone to any of my kids' birthdays, you know, taking my kids to a birthday party and so forth, and they have hot dogs, and I see the ketchup thing there, I'll stare down a kid. You're not putting that on there.
Well, when my kids were really little, I taught them that putting ketchup on a hot dog is an abomination. And one day we went to pick up my daughter at daycare, and the daycare teacher pulled us aside, kind of concerned, and she said, "You know, all day long, Louise was saying abomination, abomination." She probably thought we were like religious fanatics or something. And
glad that she
my wife
it.
Said, "You didn't happen to serve hot dogs for lunch today, did you?" And the woman said, "Why, yes, we did." And she said, "Did you happen to put ketchup on those hot dogs?" And she said, "Why, yes, we did." And Louise didn't know what abomination meant. She just thought that's what you called ketchup on a hot dog. "I'd like an abomination, please."
Good. Then she's telling other kids that too, hopefully. I love that. I don't think my kids have ever, I think because day one, I was like, it's just not a thing. If you're a true Chicagoan, you can't do it.
Well, unfortunately, my daughter does like ketchup on a hot dog. And so we went to the hot dog stand. I'm going to blank on the name. It's either on Dempster or Tui, Herm's Palace.
Oh, yeah.
Off of McCormick. And if you order a hot dog with ketchup, they will put it on there. But then when they serve it to you, you know, with the yellow paper, they put a big frowny face made out of ketchup on the yellow paper.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. I think I've gone to Gene and Jude's once with some ketchup packets for my fries.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned even then, don't do that. You get thrown right out of there. You get thrown right out. Other stories are like the Leaning Tower of Pisa in Niles. Like some people drive by it. They think it's cool. They know what it is. They might not know why.
It's crazy, isn't it? It's a one-half. It's a replica of the Leaning Tower of Pisa. So this was the creation of an industrialist in Chicago who had a company that made industrial fans. Mm. His last name was Ilg. And he, you know, back then Niles was just sort of out in the country.
Sure.
So he wanted to create a park for his employees to have like a place to go for outings in the country. And they built a swimming pool there. And swimming pools, I guess, need a water tower. That's what we were told. So he built a water tower, but he was a fan of Galileo's. So he made the water tower a replica of the Leaning Tower of Pisa.
Wow.
It's just kind of like a roadside attraction.
It is.
Now.
It is.
Yeah. And what amazed me, it's not open to the public, but they allowed us to go up the tower with our cameras, which was great. Little disorienting because it's tilting, right? So it's like going up a spiral staircase that's tilting.
Yeah.
So it's a little creates a little vertigo there. But you get to the top, and there are these 17th century church bells. Ilg acquired bells from Italian churches built in the 17th century. And they're up there, and they've been restored, and they ring them.
Do they ring them?
Ring them on regular. And actually, you can reach underneath and grab the clapper and ring it, which we did for the cameras
Love
for
it.
The TV show.
Love it.
Chicago Mysteries on WTTW coming April 16th at 7 p.m. Oh, excuse me. Anyway, they let us reach under there and ring these bells. And then later we heard learned that the neighbors were kind of like, what's going on? Like those bells cool. usually ring at the quarter hour.
Oh, I see, because you were doing it.
What, who's ringing? What? Why are we hearing the bells ringing?
If people heard it was Jeffrey Bear, they'd be like, okay. Yeah, I get it. Yeah. WTTW.com/Chicago Mysteries. You can explore a lot more on the website as well, which you've been doing for a lot of these last specials, so that there's kind of a companion piece. All this.
Oh yeah, there's a lot on the website.
All right, we're gonna do a little Chicago trivia, mystery trivia, and try to stump each other because it's always a good time, and okay. it's very competitive between you and me.
And we are, and we are competitive.
Jeffrey Bear's new special is Chicago Mysteries. WTTW.com/Chicago Mysteries. There's more with them next on 720 WGN. Jeffrey Bear is joining us in studio. His new special is Chicago Mysteries on WTTW. All right, so we've been doing this on and off for years, where we do a little trivia. We'll start the music, and we try to stump each other. And you are Mr. Chicago. That's how I introduce you. You are Mr. Chicago. I feel like I know enough to get me maybe in trouble, but you always stump me on some things. And you've got, why don't we kick it off with you, and then we'll flip-flop back and forth.
Okay, well, so you mentioned the Fool Killer, this mini submarine that was found on the bottom of the Chicago River. And yeah. when for the TV show and the website, when we were filming that, we went, because this deep-sea diver, Frenchie Deneau, was kind of a publicity hound, we thought, well, he probably showed up in the newspapers a lot. So we went to the archives of the Chicago Tribune, which are now over at the printing plant. A newspaper archive is called a morgue. These two wonderful people from the morgue who work for the Tribune, Marianne Mather and Corey Remore, took us around, and we found pictures of glass plate negatives of Frenchie Deneau.
Wow.
But I'm going through the morgue, and there's all this other stuff completely unrelated to the show that I just couldn't stop looking.
Can I go over here?
So here, which one of these is something that I found in the morgue at the Chicago Tribune? This is an actual proposed piece of Chicago infrastructure that was written about in the Chicago Tribune, and I found pictures of it, of renderings of what it would look like if it were ever built, which it never was.
Okay.
Three possibilities.
Okay.
One, a bridge from 73rd Street in Chicago across Lake Michigan to Michigan City, Indiana. Two, a cable car connecting the highest floors of Sears Tower directly to Union Station. Or three, a pneumatic high-speed subway system that would replace the L. One of those things there's an actual article and even drawings of in the Chicago Tribune.
Wow. I don't have a clue, but I'm going to... I have like a couple percentages on number one.
The bridge?
That bridge.
You are correct.
No way!
Yeah.
When you say drawings, I kind of think, you know, at that time, was it on a canvas, maybe?
This is just the newspaper itself.
Oh, okay. Got it. Yeah.
Actually, no. It's a photograph in the photo morgue that they printed in the newspaper. They proposed building a bridge from 73rd Street on the lakefront across the lake to Michigan City, Indiana.
Okay.
Never built.
There you go.
I can share the picture with you if you want. But you'd have to get the rights to it if you want to put
probably
it on your website.
Yeah, probably. All right. Now, I've got a more recent one. Okay, so on the night of November 22nd, 1987, the television signals of two stations in Chicago, namely WGN and WTTW, the signals were hijacked briefly, sending a pirate broadcast of an unidentified person wearing a Max Headroom mask and a costume to thousands of viewers. In the WTTW hijack, what products, people, or programs were not mentioned by the Max Headroom character? A, Clutch Cargo. B, New Coke. C, Big Bird. Or D, Chuck Swirsky. Which, there's three of them that the Max Headroom character
mentioned
them on the WTTW hijack.
So someone sort of interfered with our signal and put this 19, what year was it?
1987.
Right, there was a TV series called Max Headroom, this kind of weird robotic sort of person.
Broke into GN and then later broke into TTW the same night.
Chuck Swirsky.
It's Big Bird.
Big Bird?
For some reason.
It's PBS.
I know. That's why it was a good stumper. A, Clutch Cargo. He mentioned New Coke. And for some reason, Chuck Swirsky.
So he didn't even know what station he was interrupting.
Apparently not.
We had talked about, several people had talked about whether we should include that as one of our Chicago mysteries.
Well, because it's a mystery.
It is a mystery. I just felt like it was a little too...
poppy? Pop culture-y?
And I mean, kind of long ago for... It was kind of a... Max Headroom was such a pop culture phenomenon.
Oh, yeah, it wouldn't...
But nobody remembers
him. Nobody remembers him anymore.
So, yeah. You know, I decided...
All right, you're next.
Oh, okay. So in our show, Chicago Mysteries, we talk about Native American trails in Chicago. There's actually a trail tree, which, you know, Native Americans used to bend trees over and tie them down to mark their trails. Okay. And where I grew up in Deerfield, there's one that still exists. So what happens is then they start to grow back up towards the sun. That's so wild. You get these gigantic trees with an S curve in the middle of them.
Wow.
And they're Native American trail trees. So, and then we talked about how they marked Native American trails. So which one of these diagonal, and then I should say that many of the diagonal streets in Chicago follow old Indian trails. That's why there are we have a street grid in Chicago, right, but it's slashing through it are these diagonal streets. They are a legacy of the people who were here long before non-native settlers, the indigenous people who lived here for centuries. So which one of these diagonal streets in Chicago was not originally a Native American trail? Ogden Avenue, Rogers Avenue, Vincennes Avenue.
Oh my God, Rogers.
That is correct.
Oh, get out of here.
And it's for a kind of a sad reason. So Rogers Avenue is a diagonal street that follows what was called the Indian boundary line. So when the non-native settlers were coming in and they were going to, you know, settle Chicago, the U.S. government wanted to eliminate the Native Americans, wanted to get rid of them so that they could sell their land and to settlers. And so one of the first steps in this was to keep Native Americans away from the Chicago River. So they drew a line on a map from Rogers Park on the north. It was 10 miles to the north and south of the Chicago River.
Okay.
And just a straight line going diagonally from the northeast to the southwest. And Native Americans were not allowed to live within those boundaries, 10 miles north or south of the river.
Okay.
And that was called the Indian Boundary Line, and Rogers Avenue sits right on the old Indian Boundary Line.
It's a pure guess.
See? Brilliant.
But brilliant. Okay. All right. So Chicago is laid out on a grid system, overlaid in diagonal streets, as you just mentioned. We're doing this. As a result, there's many intersections with three streets converge. So only one, though, can properly call itself Six Corners, Irving Park, Cicero Avenue, and Milwaukee. But Milwaukee North and Damon also tries to claim the title of Six Corners, mm-hmm. but it's properly known as A, the Crotch, B, the Jam, or C, the Belt.
Oh, gosh. Well, that's Wicker Park.
Yep.
I've never heard this.
Really?
Wicker Park was kind of the land of hipsters. It's actually been eclipsed a little now by Logan Square.
Yes.
What are those names?
The Crotch, the Jam, or the Belt.
I say the Crotch.
It's the Crotch. Ding, ding, ding.
Who calls it that?
I have no idea. I found it in the Chicago Encyclopedia. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, how about that?
Yeah, look at that. All right, we'll do one more each. Go ahead.
Okay. So another one of our Chicago mysteries that we have in the program is a book called Bullets for Dead Hoods. This guy who happens to be a gallery owner in Chicago is very interested in mob history, and he was passing a junk store that was going out of business. This is in our show. And the guy said, "Well, what are you interested in?" And he said, "You know, the mob." And the guy went and pulled this envelope off a shelf and handed it to him, and it was this A to Z. It was all hand typed, you know, yellowed paper. It was in a weathered envelope, an A to Z encyclopedia of Chicago mobsters that clearly had to have been written by someone who was
inside.
On the inside.
Wow.
And no, obviously, totally anonymous. Yeah. No one named
not.
In it. No author mentioned.
Okay.
A lot of names are named, but the author is not mentioned. So the mystery is who wrote it. And you can see the show and find out if we solve that or not.
Okay.
But one of the gangsters featured by the anonymous author of the mysterious A to Z encyclopedia of Chicago mob called Bullets for Dead Hoods was Samuel Nails Morton. How did this wise guy die? One, he was one of the victims of the St. Valentine's Day Massacre. Two, after killing a rival, he started laughing and choked on the gum he was chewing. Or three, he was thrown from a horse on a pleasure ride in Lincoln Park. Samuel Nails Morton. Was he one of the St. Valentine's Day Massacre victims? Was he killed? Did he die because after he killed a rival, he started laughing and choked on the gum he was chewing? Or was he thrown from a horse on a pleasure ride in Lincoln Park?
Thrown from a horse.
You got it right.
Yeah.
Did you know this one?
No.
Oh, okay.
Made sense. It made sense at the end of the day. Because there's a lot of people that you would assume would die from some mafia-related incident.
Uh-huh.
And that sounded so simple.
Ah, okay.
Two of them I guessed. All right, this one you'll probably get to. This is the last one. Who popularized Wrigley Field with the phrase, the friendly confines?
Jack Brickhouse.
He's not even a choice. All right, let me go.
He's not?
No, he's not.
You're kidding.
No, no, no. It's either A, William Wrigley Jr., B, Ernie Banks, or C, Billy Williams.
It was not Jack Brickhouse.
It was not Jack Brickhouse.
Well, then
he said it a million times.
Of course he did.
Yeah.
I have no idea. Was it Ernie Banks?
It was Ernie Banks. Wrigley Field, popularized by Hall of Fame shortstop and first baseman. However, Ebbets Field, home of the Brooklyn Dodgers and the Robins, had the phrase first in 1922. Yankee Stadium started calling themselves the Friendly Confines in 1934, but it was Ernie Banks.
And I did not know that either, that other stadia also.
I think I won, everybody.
Yeah, you won. You did it.
All right, Jeffrey Berlow's new special, Chicago Mysteries on WTTW. And really, go to the website, too. There's a lot of fun that you can connect to the special as well.
And I should say, you can watch the show there, too.
Yeah, you can watch it there, too, WTTW.com/Chicago Mysteries. Always a pleasure, my friend.
It was my pleasure to be here. Thank you.
We'll see you soon.